You're listening to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Lexington podcast. Take a moment to center yourself in this space and enjoy this week's sermon.
Today's reading is entitled "For When People Ask" by Rosemary Wotola Trummer. I want a word that means okay and not okay. More than that, a word that means devastated and stunned with joy. I want a word that says, I feel it all at once. The heart is not like a songbird singing only one note at a time. More like a Tuvan throat singer, able to sing both the drone and simultaneously two or three harmonics above it. A sound, the Tuvans say, that gives the impression of wind swirling among rocks. The heart understands swirl. How the churning of opposite feelings weaves through us like an insistent breeze, leads us wordlessly deeper into ourselves, blesses us with paradox so we may walk more openly into this world so rife with devastation, this world so ripe with joy.
Well, it is good to be together this morning. Wow. For some reason, I've been thinking about a story that happened several years ago when I was in college, and I've joked about this before. Me and the other cool kids in the theology department would go to other churches or religious traditions and scope them out. I was working, almost done working, I was working at a pharmacy at the time, and I was a technician there, but for some reason I was on the candy counter that day. And this woman comes in and she's just talking, normal chit-chat, small talk kind of thing. And before she leaves, she flings something out of her purse at me and she's like, Jesus said my love this here, this is for you, bye. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And she said, this is for you, Jesus saved my life, read this. And it was one of those Jack Chick publications. Do you know what I'm talking about? Those little rectangular comic books. The most famous one is something like, what are you going to do with your life? And the man goes to hell, but then he changes his life and then he doesn't. Something to that effect. And it had the name of the church stamped on the back of it. And I asked her to just tell me about this. I was curious. You know, I'm a Unitarian Universalist. I want to know more about this. And she's like, oh, you need to come to this church. This is where we're located. And for anyone that lived in that particular part of the suburbs of Chicago, I knew exactly what church she was talking about, and I was always curious what happened inside of there. You would drive on this busy, sprawl-laden road through the suburbs, and there, glowing most prominently at night, was a neon sign, bright blue neon sign that said, Jesus saves, in the shape of a cross. And I always wondered what happens inside this church building. So I decided to go. On a Wednesday evening, that's when their next church service was, my friends didn't want to go. And so I walk in. We don't have, the front row's fuller than it usually is. I did not sit in the front row. I sat way in the back. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening and I'm like, okay, there's a lot of people here. All right. I don't know. The church is starting late. It's not begun. All right. And all of a sudden I hear a sound and I see all these people up by what could best be considered an altar or a giant pulpit with an altar. And I hear this distinct sound and it wasn't long before I go, they're all speaking in tongues. And I was just about to leave when the person that invited me showed up with her family. Did anyone grow up in a tradition that spoke tongues? Okay. Yeah, it was completely, I had never experienced it. It was something. Yeah. And she's like, no, you need to come sit with us in our pew, which is all the way up front. It was like three in. And there, I'm there. Over the next 3 hours, there was testimonies that went at least an hour long. There was just standing and singing and singing and singing and singing and singing and singing, which I love to sing, but it was a lot of singing. It's like Seinfeld. That was a lot of gum. It was a lot of singing. And then at least two or three sermons, mini sermons. It was a very long service. But I took some time to notice what was happening. And, you know, for a lot of people there, that worked for them, right? I could just see it. People were crying. They were bursting out laughing. You could feel the energy in the room. I remember looking at the Bibles in the pews, and they were filled with underlines and highlights and notes from a variety of different people. It was like an ongoing commentary from anyone who happened to be sitting in that pew throughout the years. And I remember especially, though, the testimony part of the service that would go on for a very long time with a lot of singing and music underneath it. And people shared some of the most visceral parts of their lives. They would be sobbing on the floor or ecstatic with joy. And I remember going, I wonder what that feels like. I've been a UU for quite some time, right? There was no major testimony part of the service in the church I grew up in, right? It was a very humanist experience, and yet there's something really meaningful about it, and yet we didn't have that, whatever that was, and I didn't really know what that was as a youth in college. But what I took away from that was there was something very powerful about surrendering what was going on in your life to this idea of a God that they had. Now, many of you probably know this phrase if you grew up in these traditions. It's usually called letting go and let God, right? Letting go and let God, or other variations of that. And the question I've had, and I've had this for years, is do Unitarian Universalists have a version of that? Even if a majority of you UUs are agnostic or not so sure about the God question, or it's not the primary question, or they're atheists, or maybe they have more than one God or goddess, or completely different understandings. Is there something like that within our tradition that's letting go and let something? So, I think that practice, while I struggle with that practice that I experienced, and I know many of you do too, I think it points to something a little more universal than just that specific form of Christianity in suburban Chicago, or whatever traditions those of you that raise your hands grew up in. It points to something that is present in so many mystic traditions, and even some philosophical traditions throughout history. Stoicism is a good example of this. Dr. Danny Sharara out of Duquesne University, I think in Pennsylvania, I could be wrong, wrote his doctoral dissertation on the psychology of surrender in spirituality. And in that, he looked specifically at Sufism and Zen, but also expanded it to all these other traditions where at some point, there's this point where the self kind of dissolves and you just get swept up in feeling and suddenly everything is okay. Has a very intense impact on one's psychology to just hand something over and know it's going to be okay. No matter what it is, the joys, the sorrows, everything in between. And you see this across mostly the mystic traditions, but you even see it in a congregation with a bright neon sign on a busy road outside of Chicago. You see it in, the varieties of, I just call them mountain Baptists, I don't know their real names, but the varieties of Baptists in the mountains or the other churches where there is this ecstatic experience. And so I've been really curious about that. So what do we have? Now, the answer that comes up, which you might expect a minister to say, is, well, we have community. That's it. Is that enough? And I kind of feel like it isn't. Like, is that the answer? Is that what it should be? And if it's not that, do we just lack this idea of letting go, and letting something take it on for us, of surrendering, of handing our burdens, laying down our burdens? Do we have that? So, of course, I look to our history for this, because we might have some glimpses of this that are definitely still alive for us today. Before we were Unitarian Universalists, the Unitarians had this idea of salvation by character. By improving your own character in community, that was the road to salvation. Which is interesting, right? It's not salvation by works, it's not salvation by grace. It's salvation by your own internal work in community. The Universalists said, all things ultimately are reconciled unto the divine, no matter what. The interesting word there is ultimately, because the Universalists disagreed. Sometimes it was immediate, sometimes you'd suffer a little bit and then God would eventually forgive you, right? So I feel like that gives us a little glimpse, maybe a possibility of what we might have that is similar to, not exactly like, because none of them are exact or carbon copies of one another, but something that's similar here. Now you fast forward to when the Unitarians and Universalists merged together, we threw out a lot of our old traditions, our old practices. Some might say the baby with the bathwater. I like to say we're the Protestants that kept on protesting until there wasn't much left. And now as we develop as a tradition, we're like, okay, so what do we want to bring back in? What's healthy? What's good? What's exciting? What's really interesting here, right? Which is why you get a breadth of experiences in UU congregations. But it's led to an interesting challenge, right? We love matters of the mind as Unitarian Universalists, but what about the matters of the heart? What about these feelings of letting go, of surrender, of opening up to something bigger than ourselves? I know that struggle because it's my struggle all the time. All the time. But if that sounds unusual to you, you're like, what are you talking about, Brian? That's good. That's really good. My experience here in this congregation is counter to the struggle I experienced and counter the struggle I had as a youth in Unitarian Universalism, wondering where the heart was. This congregation is a congregation with heart. I've had so many colleagues who visit and they go, oh my goodness, this is a congregation that likes to have a good time with each other, that likes to get to the matters of the heart, and yes, still has the matters of the mind as well. That's from colleagues who have never, ever visited this place before, and they just offer that up. It's a wonderful thing to feel the energy and to feel the good that is happening here. But that hasn't stopped us from repeating some of those Unitarian Universalist stereotypes that we really like sometimes, right? You use all think alike. I don't know where that one came from. Or we're just rich white people.
Not I.
You hear that? And Marilyn, sometimes it's said right in front of you, right? And you're like, wait a minute. We don't do the God thing. That's another one. Some of you do, and some more than one. And so on, and so on, and so on. And sometimes those stereotypes can be really funny, too. Especially when they lead to terrible Unitarian Universalist jokes. Oh. We know some of those, right? My goodness. This is going to be bad. Here's one. Do you know what they say about Unitarian Universalist funerals?
What do they say?
All dressed up and nowhere to go. Or what's the Holy Trinity to Unitarian Universalism? Thank you. What's the Holy Trinity to Unitarian Universalism? Reuse, reduce, recycle. Yeah. I think it's so important to laugh at religion and to laugh at so many things in life, because life can be tragic and hard and difficult, and religion has its serious moments and its meaningful and beautiful and touching moments, but also it's hilarious too because it's human. I think it's so important. But we get back to that original question. After the laughter, when life is difficult, what is it we hand over? Do we hand over something? Do we let go and let God in our own way as Unitarian Universalists? Now, I'm convinced the answer is twofold. Yes, community is a piece of this, but I don't think it can just be that. Communities will disappoint you. Human communities will disappoint you. This place has probably disappointed you if you've been here a long time, or you just showed up and you're like, what on earth is happening here? Think of the times when communities have disappointed you. It happens, and it's okay. It's okay, because if you care about a community, it disappoints you, you reinvest, you try to recommit, you try to think about how do I build this back up. But we can't fix it for everybody or everything. And if we get caught in that trap, that community should be perfect for everyone, we're doomed for failure. So it can't just be community. It can't just be our principles, 8 principles in this congregation, 7 principles for our UUA. It can't just be our principles, because those change. They've changed in my lifetime. They've changed since the 1960s. Some people resonate with one over the other. Some people don't even know what they are. And that's okay, because they're not a creed. And you connect with them in a way that's meaningful for you. It can't be our chalice here. That's an inanimate object. What burdens can you lay down before that? You could try. So I'm feeling that there's an interesting play here between psychology and spirituality. How do the two intersect? And how do we find a different path? Because we are a different path here. For many of our Christian friends, let go and let God is what works. Because there's this idea of something permanent, unmoving, unchanging, all-powerful. And for some of us, we have that, but not all of us. Or we're still figuring it out for ourselves. But I really wonder what's that like, to leave my burdens with the deity and be good. What does that feel like? I come out of a very humanist UU expression where we didn't really talk about deity at all. We just didn't think it was an important thing. And now in my own practice, I'm a Zen Buddhist UU who Buddha doesn't care. Dharma doesn't care. It's like the honey badger. Honey badger don't care. So what is it for us? What is it for us? And is even us possible in this question? If something is always changing, it isn't some far-off ideal, something that we can't really reach, but what really is it going to be? Now, our path asks us to grow, to change, to journey, to be open. There's no one-and-done spirituality here. And I love that about who we are. No one-and-done. You won't get that here. And for some folks, they want that. They need that. And that's okay. I can see the appeal sometimes of just, all right, I've got my answers. I've got what I need to believe. I got what I need to make sense of this world, because there has to be some sense in it. But we have chosen a different way, a different path here. Heidi Grant, who's a social psychologist that's affiliated with Harvard, says we need to all be realistic optimists. And the way she breaks that down, what is realistic optimism here? The way she breaks it down is balancing your needs for certainty and uncertainty in your life. So sometimes optimism can be, I am certain it's all going to be fine as the world is burning around you, right? So how do you turn that into a balance between certainty and uncertainty? And in other words, how do you get comfortable with both of those? For Unitarian Universalists, we can just flip that around from psychology to the faith journey as well, because we're trying to forge this middle path here where we're certain about some things. It might be different than Glenn. Glenn and I might be certain about different things. Marilyn and I, different about certain things, but also wrestling with the uncertainty of life and living and being human here. So that's the other component here. It has to start with us in a way that doesn't turn into selfishness or narcissism, right? Another balancing act and another sermon and talk altogether, right? That begins with the individual work, to do the work for ourselves. And there's only so many things we can control. You've seen those therapy pillows that tell you what you can control and what you can't control in life and all that good stuff, right? But I feel that the road to equilibrium is in making peace with that, that there's so many things that we cannot control, and yet we can still find joy and peace and a way forward in life. I feel that once we do that, our relationship with life itself starts to change once we stop trying to control everything and create the world in our image. Going back to that paper out of Duquesne University, what he discovered is that the mystic paths, and sometimes these kind of mystic philosophical paths, lead to a greater satisfaction in life because there's a balance between certain and uncertain. There's a call to do that internal work, and the other piece of it, to join in community in that work. We could say this about any path, really. They all have something that develops resiliency for ourselves and for each other. So we embark upon this as individuals. That's how it all starts. But then we discover a community like this that's heavy into the mystery and a thirst for knowledge. And so is that community an essential part of your path, is my question. You're all here this morning, I hope so. I hope so. But how wonderful that is for us to discover something like that. We're all seeking answers for our lives. We're seeking a way forward. We're seeking wholeness and hope and peace and joy. And we discover a community that will be with us on that journey. And we say to each other, you are welcome on that journey. And we will join with you as you are on that journey. But you need to begin the journey yourself. You can't sum that all up in a nice little pithy statement, let go and let God. You cannot put that on a t-shirt or a coffee mug or a pillow or a bumper sticker. But you can share with others what that feels like, what that means to you, what that has done for your own path and journey. And it can be just as powerful, if not more powerful, than what some of our friends in that church outside of Chicago experienced. I feel like this is why the heart matters here. And it does harken back to who we are throughout our history. The Unitarians were all about growth and character. And you have to make that choice. And the Universalists, there is an element of admitting you are imperfect, but it's going to be okay. It will all be okay eventually. So here's the truth about this, though. For all the stereotypes about intellectual you use, we like those. I mean, they can be funny, right? The laugh at ourselves. I don't have any more jokes. You got plenty. I could go, but they're funny, right? But for all the stereotypes that sometimes you use like to repeat, sometimes that we struggle against, sometimes we think are hilarious, sometimes we're just like, God, oh, here we go with the U. We have to put two U's in every word with a U, right? For all of that, there's a somber realization that even in our communities, the fullness of humanity is here every single week. And that includes the joy. But it also includes those of you that are struggling with employment or what's next after retirement. It includes those of you that are struggling with health, sometimes unexpected things, sometimes slow-moving things, sometimes fast-moving things, diagnoses that you just didn't want to hear or diagnoses that you can manage, but you didn't need one more thing in your life. Those of you who are struggling with aging across age ranges, but those of you that are especially thinking of, how will I take care of myself as I continue to age? How will others take care of me, and how will my wishes be respected? Those of you that are struggling with finances, thinking of the millennials and their student loans. I'm thinking of all of you struggling to find a house, struggling to find some balance to that bank account of yours. Those of you who are struggling with relationships, wondering if this is going to work out or there's strain on a marriage. Those of you struggling with loneliness, all of that is here. Am I worthy? Am I enough? What does this all mean? And instead of pushing those burdens on some great other, UUism continues to say, all right, hey, we may not have that other, right? But here, you are not alone in that journey. Here, we will continue to remind you, you have what you need to make sense of this. And you will not be alone in that. It's not neat and tidy, but it is so human. We are entering into a profound season for so many people across this globe. Ramadan, there's a reflection on what really matters in life and how can I be of service. Lent, a reflection on not just running away from the darkness, but reflection in the darkness. And let it embrace you, envelop you, and hold you. And what meaning can you find there? And the spring equinox, where it continues to tell us that in life there is always renewal. Always. So that's not a neat and tidy answer, but something. My minister growing up, Ed Searle, the late Ed Searle, whom I still miss dearly, had a saying on the church sign in Hinsdale, Illinois for decades, all 3 decades that he served there as the minister. And it said, the church of the human spirit. It was on that sign so long, you can still drive by it and you can see the faded, like you could see it still, even though they've changed it, you could still see the imprint of the letters there. The church of the human spirit. May it be so. May we continue to be a church of the human spirit. May we continue to find that we have what we need on this journey of life, joining together with friends for the journey. Blessed be. Amen.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. If you would like to learn more about us, please visit our website at www.ucl.org, where you can find more information about our grounds, staff, and upcoming events. You can also subscribe to our e-news there and learn about our virtual service offerings. We'll see you next week.